You're listening to Innovating Infrastructure, where we showcase new and emerging technology-based solutions to the world's infrastructure challenges. I'm Monica Bennett, and I'll be your host for this 10-part series, which is presented to you by the Global Infrastructure Hub. Each podcast episode will be a 25-minute interview with emerging entrepreneurs from the top 10 finalists of our InfraChallenge Innovation Competition. InfraChallenge gives startups and innovators the opportunity to present their technology-based solutions to the world. This year, it's being supported by the Italian G20 presidency, and the competition is focused on solutions for better and more resilient infrastructure. Don't miss our virtual InfraChallenge final event on Thursday, the 16th of September. You can find out more and register on our website at gihub.org. Today, to talk about his work in building a global database of infrastructure projects and performance, I'm excited to welcome Giridhar Srinivasan, the co-founder and CEO of InfraClear and one of the top 10 finalists of InfraChallenge 2021. For the world to recover from COVID and to address climate change, impactful and innovative solutions need to be implemented at speed and at scale. Half of our infrastructure for 2050 is already being built or planned today. Therefore, we need to be well-equipped to make decisions that set us in the right path over the next few decades. Having good infrastructure data will be key to making the right kinds of decisions. However, as it stands, a global data set on infrastructure projects and performance is not readily available. The result from this lack in data is that decisions are being made on the basis of precedents. And now that we live in exceptional times, what has worked before may not necessarily work now. Our guest today, Giridhar from InfraClear, will take us through his software as a service platform that provides global infrastructure data. Now, let's get into the interview. Enjoy. I have with me today Giridhar Srinivasan, the CEO of InfraClear. Giridhar, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Monica.
The one thing that struck me about your InfraChallenge pitch was that you estimated that poor project development and poor risk management could potentially cost the industry around $650 billion a year. So when you compare this with the total projected global investment into infrastructure of about $4 trillion a year, I mean, this is obviously substantial when you compare it to the cost of actual project development as well. So this is incredible. And so, you know, why is this happening and how is InfraClear helping to solve this problem?
Yeah, look, the first thing we just have to realize is that infrastructure lives in the digital stone age. You put together agreements from scratch each time. If you were going to ask a developer or a governor to ask, how's a project been done before? Or how have the last solar projects been structured? No one knows. No one has that data. So if you don't have data on how things have been done before, what do? You go and develop projects from scratch. So that's what happens. We are developing about $4 trillion of public and private infrastructure every year. And we're doing it pretty much by hand. It's governments and developers and lenders come together to develop these projects. And if you look at how much money is spent, about 10% of the total project costs are spent upfront by those three parties trying to develop successful projects. So do the math on that, 10% of $4 trillion, spending $400 billion a year to go and develop a project. The worst part of this is that 90% of the projects never get financed. And if you think about how much money is spent on busted deals, you're spending another $250 billion a year. So it's an extraordinary sum of money that is wasted on project development. And what we just have to conclude in infrastructure, stare the data in the face and realize we have a failed industrial process for going and developing infrastructure projects. It's really costly.
Giridhar, you mentioned that developing infrastructure projects from scratch is one of the key pain points in being able to develop and invest in infrastructure projects. What are the implications of this in reality? So how does this actually manifest itself?
Yeah. So here's the first thing, that when you don't have data on how projects have been done before, you have to go and make up projects from scratch. You have to put together thousands of pages of really complicated agreements. Concession agreements, offtake agreements, construction contracts, operation and maintenance agreements, loan agreements. There's usually 15, 20 different institutions, banks, developers, utilities, regulators, insurance companies negotiating these agreements. So you have a complex multi-party agreement where everyone's trying to go and put together 2,000 pages of documents from scratch each time. That's a nightmare. I tell the story about how my very first project at IFC was to go and work on a 28 megawatt solar power project in Burkina Faso. It took 8.5 years to get the deal done. And probably about a third, even half that time was spent trying to help the government figure out that this is actually a fair deal. So first of all, without data on what's been done before, it takes an unbelievable amount of time. We have no chance of being able to go and develop enough solar power, enough wind, enough geothermal to avoid the worst effects of climate change. Second thing is these agreements are super complicated. The complexity of all these documents means that you're left exposed with all these risks. So then what happens? Something bad happens and people want to go and restructure and renegotiate the agreement. And guess what? 50% of projects in infrastructure get restructured, or we call it renegotiation, but that's restructuring. So when you have these super complicated documents with very little transparency, you have risks that blow up in your face. And the last thing I'd say about this is they do blow up in our face. They blow up in the government's face. The IMF did a study in 2016 where they showed that 20% of government fiscal crises happened because of invoking of guarantees to infrastructure projects. And each time it cost on average 1% to 3% of GDP. In the case of Jordan in 2016, it cost them 15% of their GDP to pay out guarantees in the electricity sector. So gosh, this lack of transparency hurts us trying to develop projects, manage risk, and it has big financial consequences.
And so how is your technology solving this problem? And also, how can you have an impact on those savings in terms of cost overruns and also any savings associated with the development of the project?
Yeah. So look, so what we do at InfraClear is we realize that there's information on thousands of projects already out there. We already have a database of about 13,000 project agreements. As far as we know, it's already the world's largest database of prior project agreements. So what we started to do was we started to use a field of machine learning, related to machine learning, called natural language processing, which for those not familiar with the term, it's basically text analytics on steroids. And what we do is we go and extract the key terms that drive the risks and the structuring of the project. And then once you surface those risks, we use that for a number of different purposes to really, we create products on top of this data platform, right? So now you have a huge database of all the key risks. And the question is, what can you do to make it simpler, faster, cheaper to develop projects, improve risk management, and make this dense, opaque market a liquid, transparent, easy to understand market? So we're creating products all along those chains to go and help developers, to help banks, to help insurance companies, to help governments accelerate the process of developing projects, improve risk management, and make this a liquid asset class.
So how do you pull together this database of contracts? Is that information confidential? And if so, you know, how challenging is it to get access to that kind of information?
A lot of these are projects involving a government. A lot of the contracts are public, but they're spread across about 15,000 different sources. And we basically went and tracked down a bunch of those. With a few hundred sources, we already have the world's largest database of agreements. So we're just getting started. So the answer is the information is hiding in plain sight if you know where to look, but it's a painstaking process to go and get it. There's a key role for the Global Infrastructure Hub and the multilaterals to play in terms of the standardization of data and reporting of performance information, financial information, and contracts. It would greatly simplify our process and make it a more open market.
And let's talk a little bit more about the decision-making process. So being an aggregated source of data is definitely alleviating a pain point when it comes to structuring these kinds of infrastructure deals. You also mentioned that you're able to bring more bankable projects to market. So is your platform also determining which is bankable and which isn't? Or are you using the data to enable the decision maker to make that decision in a better way?
We are a neutral source of truth for the industry. We are not here to come and say there's a good project or a bad project. What we are here to say is, well, can you look at the performance of assets like yours in the past? Now we can go, we have a super scalable data pipeline. We can basically look at, here are all the terms that make up a project. We can get loan performance information and say, here's what works. So maybe this is the right decision. The first question was, how do we enable better decision making? It's by showing people what's worked in the past and how things have been done before. That allows you to go and replicate success. The other question you ask me is, will you go and tell someone what's bankable? We're never going to go and say, there's a bankable deal. We're here to go and present the data and bring transparency, simplicity, and better decision-making tools for people themselves to go and determine what's a good deal. But how do we enable more bankable projects to come to market? A lot of people, there's a lot of pearl clutching, hand-wringing around, oh my gosh, there's not enough bankable projects. Well, gee, if 90% of the technically viable projects are failing, if we could reduce the failure rate from 90% to 89%, if we could bring that down by 1%, we bring another $400 billion of projects to market every year. So what we do is we figure out what data decision makers need, target the right user with the data they need, and help them get more projects over the line. And I really believe that we can do this. The world can go and develop enough climate-friendly, resilient infrastructure projects. It's just targeting that right group of decision makers with the information they need to make it easier, faster, and cheaper to go and develop projects. Small interventions can have big impact.
In terms of some of the benefits that you mentioned earlier, it seems as though you're able to make quite a significant dent on some of these costs associated with project development and also some of the cost overruns. So, you know, you mentioned $400 billion of cost associated with development, as well as $650 billion of cost overruns associated with failed projects and poor risk management. Can you summarize how your technology is able to make a dent in these figures and what kind of impact you might potentially have?
We estimate it's about $400 billion on successful projects, spent on developing successful projects, another $250 billion on busted deals and just poor risk management in this space. So talking about project development, if you talk to a developer or a lender or a government, when they're trying to go and develop a new power project or a road or a port, they spend money on three things. One, staff costs, right? People trying to go and do a deal. That's a big cost. The second is about a third of the money is spent on permits and studies and approvals. The last category is spent on legal fees, and that can be 2% of project cost every year, sometimes even more than that. So these are all interlinked problems. People spend a lot of money on project development. People sort of wait around to get consensus on these really complicated agreements just because there's no data on what's worked before. So in terms of the impact, bring more projects to market by simplifying decision making. We have these really complex agreements. Let's extract the data, put a simple data visualization overlay, and then make it much easier for people to go and invest in a project. So thick documents, data visualization, trillions into infrastructure. Voila. That's what we wanted to go and do. That's what we are doing. That's the heart of it. We have really complex documents that very few people understand, and so we can't make investment decisions. So by simplifying it and bringing data elegance and simplicity to the whole process, we can accelerate the decision-making process. That's the first thing. Radically simplify decision-making and infrastructure. How much cost can be taken out? Bankers tell us 30, 40% of the total project cost. That's the first thing. Risk management, loan portfolio officers are overwhelmed with paper. You go to a major project finance bank, they probably have 1,000 projects in their portfolio worldwide. Each one of those projects has about 10 base documents and 10 waivers and amendments associated with it, 20 documents. They have 20,000 documents that they have to keep track of. Each one of those documents, each one of those projects, 5,000 projects, has about 1,000 projects, has about 5,000 parameters that they have to go and track. 5 million parameters. You know when they hear of problems on a project? When things blow up. So what we can do is to go and extract that data, make it really easy for people to understand the risks in their portfolio, track it, and never miss another turn. So next time they say, oh, there's been a strike along your project site or in the port, your wind turbine is coming in, right? You know about that right away, and you can take preventative action, maybe divert the cargo. Maybe you can go and say, hey, you know what, government? According to the contract, you're on the hook to go and pay out in the event of a strike. You don't want to do that. See if you can get the cargo through, or see if you can go talk to the union to see if we can go and resolve the issue. It's that kind of preventative thing that we can do. Being aware of a problem, being aware of the potential shocks and stresses is the first step to making our infrastructure more resilient. And there's a lot more we can talk about in terms of securitization, but we think that we could be saving the industry about $100 billion a year by securitizing the infrastructure loans.
And that is a great segue to start talking about a use case for the technology. So are you able to give us an example of a primary challenge that one of your customers has come to you with, how your solution has been able to address this, and also how it's actually changed the way that they've made the decision? So you mentioned there an example of diverting an investment from one sector to another based on greater transparency and availability of information. Are you able to take us through an example of a use case and the result from the use of your technology?
Yeah, so we're just starting to go and deploy this right now with our first few clients. Let me talk to you about a use case around securitization. So if you think about infrastructure securitization, there's about $3 trillion of infrastructure loans that are outstanding. Less than 1% of that has been securitized. It's an illiquid, opaque, messy market. Why is that the case? Today, if you are Swiss Re Asset Management or Munich Re Asset Management, you're subject to a bunch of capital adequacy rules called Solvency II. They govern how you should use your capital base. Solvency II, we want to go and develop a lot of infrastructure in Asia and Africa. 60% of the new build is going to happen in Asia. We all want to develop more infrastructure in Africa. The problem is the regulators in Europe who manage solvency too, say that, well, gee, this is a below investment grade asset that is a cross-border, non-EU, non-OECD asset that is illiquid. Well, the capital charge for that can be 40 to 50%, meaning so for a $1 billion portfolio, you have to hold $400 to $500 million in cash reserves because it's illiquid, not transparent, below investment grade, cross-border. No one wants to do it. That's just a drag on your returns, right? By exposing the data on what drives potential losses, what drives the risks of these projects, we can reduce those Solvency II charges by up to 65%, if not more. So that allows you to free up a lot more cash and makes investing in emerging market infrastructure much easier, much more economically viable. What's the opportunity for the world over here? Well, today, the world is infrastructure loans are 1% securitized. If you look at the US real estate market, 70% securitized. So a lot more liquidity can be created. We can reduce the costs of borrowing and create a liquid, make this a liquid asset class. What's the impact for a bank in an emerging market? Let's say you're Ecobank doing a new power project in Ghana. They're a good bank and they're trying to feel their way through this deal. They can only say go out 8 years. That's the maximum tenor of a loan that they can issue. But if they could then look at the securitized platform and we feed into that and they use our tools, then quickly figure out, gee, here are the criteria for my loan to be accepted, to be sold as a conforming loan that can be securitized and sold into a pool. Well, what they can do is they can go and underwrite, make a loan to that new power project. They look at the requirements and how that project should be structured, and then they can sell it off 3 or 4 years after the project is stabilized. So synthetically, I cannot tell you how big an impact this has on banks and emerging markets. Synthetically, we can extend the tenor of infrastructure lending and dramatically lower the cost of borrowing in emerging markets through securitization. That power project in Ghana, the loans can be sold, the concession can be sold to insurance companies who are hungry for these assets. The impact is extraordinary. Instead of trying to go through years of reform, trying to go and reform these banks, make longer term loans, we can securitize the assets.
I think InfraClear is in a great position to be working with its first customer. I mean, what do you consider to be the biggest challenge facing you right now?
So I think there's two challenges we face. One is it's been challenging to go and raise capital for this. And the second is it's been challenging to go and get adoption by your initial customers. Everybody recognizes the value proposition. Let's talk about the second challenge first, which is why it's difficult to go and get adoption by customers. Well, it has been, but that's changing. You're talking dealing with big institutions, big banks, big insurance companies and others. They have big procurement processes. So that's a challenge. The second thing on the investment side, and again, I think this is changing, is that project finance and infrastructure lives in the digital stone age. If you go to any bank or you go to any developer or you go to many of the multilaterals, they have money for projects, but they haven't been attuned to technological disruption. Hey, do you want to do a pilot around this idea, right? Or do you want to go and invest in a company, in a tech company that is developing this amazing project or amazing technology platform that can transform what you're doing? The project finance banks, the insurance companies, after they see our demo, in 2 minutes, you'll hear people say, this is revolutionary. Then you say, well, can you go and invest? It's, well, I have a $500 million budget to go and lend and invest in projects, but I don't have a dime to go and make an equity investment in a tech company that does this. So on the one hand, the big infrastructure players see it. They see the opportunity, but they don't have a tech budget to go and make equity investments. Then you go to the traditional tech investors like Silicon Valley, and many of them say, by infrastructure, do you mean like IT infrastructure or cloud infrastructure? And you're like, no, I'm talking about like power and ports. Oh, that infrastructure. But I don't know anything about the sector. I don't know how to add value to your company. And I suspect many other infratech companies are getting caught in between, where the project finance guys and the infrastructure people, they really understand this space and they understand the problem, but they don't have a tech investing budget. And then the tech investors have a budget to go invest in technology companies, but only now, with President Biden's plan right now in the United States coming to the fore, do people say, oh, yeah, infrastructure. Gee, I should probably be thinking about like, what is a disruptive opportunity in that space? So I think there's a massive chasm over there. And the funds that step into that space and start making early stage investments, those guys are going to retire early.
So what do you think is really going to convince them to actually put the money into your company and into your product?
Yeah. So the way we've decided to go is to start by customers, right? Go get 3-4 customers and then show people, folks, there's a market over here. Look at this. And this is what they're paying. And then they're going to say, holy cow, they're paying that much money. Who is it? You know, how'd you go through the process? And they call customer references. The customers have two types of requests. The first is, well, gee, I want market data and market information on what you've done before. And if you can make that information available to me on what is market really fast, I'm all in. I'll subscribe to a license for all these thousands of agreements. And then they sort of pause and you'll see a light bulb go on about 2 minutes later in the conversation. They say, you know, could you use these same algorithms to analyze my own book of risk? Because to be honest, we're flying blind. We don't know what the risks are in our portfolio. So if you can break down our big portfolio of our existing book of risk using the same algorithms that you've done for all the market information, I'd love it. So there's two products, same algorithms, pretty much the same user interface that we're selling. One is market data and market information. And the second is intelligence on your own portfolio. And that will start to unlock investors.
So you began the InfraChallenge journey in March. How do you feel that this has helped to address some of those challenges that you're facing at the moment? And what would you say has been the most valuable component of this innovation competition?
Look, first of all, I think it's been the awareness and the PR and the recognition for us being a top 10 finalist in this space has been wonderful. It's really, I got to say, it's opened up a few opportunities. People say, my gosh, I saw that. Can I find out more? And it actually has had a few investors come in and say, I read that. Tell me more about what you do. And we've actually gotten a couple of checks, which is actually very nice. So that's terrific. So I'm very happy for that. And it's a stamp of credibility and stamp of approval because it's validation by industry experts and people who follow the industry. The second thing is we're really grateful to Ben Ferns and her team at the Open Contracting Partnership. And they're really smart people. And we were teamed up with them to be a mentor. The third, I think, is the community of people and some of the seminars that have been put together, you know, brought together some people, Sidewalk Infrastructure Partners, CDP in Italy. Very interesting just to start to see that, yeah, there's now a nascent group of infratech people coming in who want to play in this space. And it's also been nice to go and meet some of the other top 10 finalists and start to build a community with them. So that's been really nice. Increasing awareness with external constituents and the brand recognition has been terrific so far.
Well, that's great to hear that InfraChallenge has been helping you out in that respect. But it's also evident that you've got quite a deep experience in structuring infrastructure deals from your previous life, you know, having worked just over 10 years with the IFC as an M&A advisor and in other firms as well prior to that. How has that experience helped you in the development of InfraClear? So was there anything that you've taken away from that experience that has really helped you along in this journey?
The technology solutions applied to fixing the problems in infrastructure can only come from people who've lived that experience. Like I banged my head against the wall for years saying, why can't we get these darn projects to financial close? So it was born out of that frustration. And I recognized the pain points and I quantified how big that opportunity was. Then I started talking to people in Silicon Valley and they said, you know, there's this thing called natural language processing and we're using it to analyze contracts. I started talking to a lot of technologists out there and every single technologist I talked to said, gosh, this is an easy problem to solve. I can tell you how to solve it. And I talked to everybody in project finance and they said, that's not possible. You can't solve that. And then I said, well, if I brought you a solution that did this, would you buy it? And they said, well, yeah, I'd be really interested in that, right? Of course, you have to get through the procurement process. But yeah, I'd be really interested in that. So I realized that, wait a minute, what am I doing over here, sitting over here and trying to develop these projects when there's a better way? So 2 years ago, I quit my job at IFC with their blessing. And went out and started this company. And we recruited an outstanding woman, Natalie Bolas, who's been developing and structuring projects for years. She's a mathematician. And so she got it when we said we're trying to go and mathematize contracts and digitize contracts. I'd say that it was born out of frustration talking to people in other industries who were doing something, who had a solution, which I realized we could apply to our problems, and then recruiting people with the right mindset. And once you assemble a great team, things start to happen. The magic starts to happen. When you bring together subject matter experts and engineers, that's where this company was born.
Giridhar, it was great to have you on our podcast today. All the best with InfraChallenge.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Find out more about this technology and other top 10 finalists of InfraChallenge 2021 at infrachallenge.gihub.org. Also, don't miss the virtual InfraChallenge final event on Thursday, the 16th of September. Join us and watch the top 10 make their final pitch to become the InfraChallenge 2021 winner. Register to attend at gihub.org. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Monica Bennett from the Global Infrastructure Hub, and you've been listening to Innovating Infrastructure.